Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We've got a wonderful show coming up for you this week. Jeff Waldorf, the host of Around the Nation on YouTube, is going to be with me to talk about some of the biggest stories of the past week and biggest stories of the past year. Among them, of course, the Trump Organization this week, guilty on all 17 counts in the fraud trial. Trump says he's going to appeal, but doesn't look like he could be too successful with that based on the evidence presented at trial. We're going to tell you all about it. Herschel Walker becomes the latest MAGA Republican to go down in flames. Republicans are just a couple weeks away from launching investigation after investigation into everything under the sun, but that could ultimately cost them in 2024. We're also going to be discussing the much ballyhooed Twitter files released basically in conjunction with Matt Taibbi and Elon Musk. We're going to tell you what those Twitter files do and do not actually show. And the Democrats are shuffling their primary schedule. We're going to tell you what is likely to come first and what this could mean for the poor people of Iowa. All that and much more coming up on today's show. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week by signing up and becoming a member. Just go to ROFpodcast.com to sign up. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, go subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Well, folks, it's been a hell of a year just this week. Trump Organization guilty on 17 counts, all 17 counts. Herschel Walker has lost his election. We've got the Democrats shuffling the primary schedule, just everything that could possibly happen, of course. The Twitter files. My God, Jeff Waldorf from Around the Nation joins me now because there's only one person that I thought of this week when I saw all of these crazy headlines. I got to get Jeff back. So, Jeff, welcome back to Ring of Fire on this slow news week, isn't it? Just nothing.
well, Gene, Farron, thank you. I'm honored that I'm, the first person that you thought of to cover the insanity. ringing endorsement right there.
When I think of insane, I'm like, that's Jeff. No. but we got to start at the top here. Obviously, the big news, you get the Trump Organization, 17 counts, all 17 counts. I keep leaving out that word, but it is very important. This is big. Obviously, this is just the civil trial, not the criminal trial, but this could lead to some big things. So, Jeff, what's your thoughts on this?
A possible, penalty of $1.6 to $1.7 million and no Trump getting, in trouble at all, I actually don't think it's that big of a deal. Honestly, the Trump Organization, $1.7 million, pocket change. Even though Donald Trump himself is not even a billionaire, right? You know he doesn't have that much money. Nonetheless, $1.7 million slap on the wrist for this organization that can still do business in New York. And I know I was reading the Washington Post article about this, and they said, well, it could really impact their ability to do business and get loans in New York. I was like, who's going to loan him money? Who's going to loan the Trump Organization any kind of money other than Russian banks and the Saudis? That's really all they have left. So really, how is this a gigantic? I know people are excited, like, yes, get Trump. I'm definitely on the get Trump bandwagon because I despise Trump like we all do, but actually get him on the real issues like his corruption, January 6th, all that stuff. But this, I don't see this as a we got him moment because we didn't get him. Alan Weisselberg, Fall Guy. 5 months. That's it. That's all he gets. 5 months in prison, slap on the wrist, hella sweet plea deal. No, I'm sorry. Not a big deal.
You bring up a really good point there because I've seen that too. People like, well, Who's going to loan him money now? Well, it's the same banks. He's been going to the foreign banks for years already because everybody in New York already knew the guy was full of it. They knew what he was doing. They knew he didn't actually have the money to back it up. It's Donald Trump, right?
Yep.
All of his, you know, scandals have been very public, even long before he became president. They knew about his failed businesses. Mm-hmm. They knew that this wasn't the savvy businessman that he's built himself. So he went to the foreign banks. He went to Deutsche Bank. He went to other banks in Europe. He went to the Russian bank. He's, you know, best friends with the Saudis now. They're bailing out Jared Kushner. And just a side note on the whole Kushner thing, I was reading this morning, the Democrats in the House have ramped up their investigation into him, and they literally have days left in office.
Right.
So, okay, you screwed the pooch on that. But either way, Trump's money is not going to come from the United States. He is going to reach out to he'll go to North Korean banks if he has to. He's got a great relationship with them.
I just recently read an article related to Donald Trump doing business with a North Korean related business. I'm getting money from them. Interesting that you bring that up, Farron.
You know,
it certainly can't be a coincidence, right?
Oh, absolutely not. And that is just another piece of this corruption puzzle that is still very slowly coming together. But we're running out of time to put this puzzle together, whether it is with these investigations, you know, the House, the DOJ. Basically, once January starts, we're in the middle of the 2024 presidential race. You could argue we're already there at this point. But as we recall, you know, when we headed into 2016 race in January and February of 2015 is when everybody starts jumping in. Same thing with the Democrats going into 2020. So all of this new stuff is going to be happening. We're going to have, you know, more candidates jumping in, possibly even on the Democratic side. And Trump is going to kind of, I don't want to say fall to the wayside, but I think the investigations could, because we know how cowardly all of these groups investigating him truly seem to be. Like, well, we don't want to touch him because he's running for office and then we're going to be seen as interfering. It's pathetic. Like, do your job. It doesn't matter who the person is. Do your job and let's get it done. We know it's there. Just come on, move forward with it already.
Yeah, and I think I know who you're addressing exactly. Alvin Bragg. Alvin Bragg, one of the worst DAs ever.
He will not
go after Trump. Now, Letitia James is a different story. She actually her case against the Trump Organization is actually significant, even though that is a civil case. $250 million is on the line. That's a lot more than a $1.7 million potential penalty. And so if anything is going to hurt Donald Trump, at least when it comes to the thing he values most, which is his pocketbook, Letitia James, that's where it's at when it comes to these investigations. But as far as everything else, you're right that it's very, very possible that some of this stuff will go to the wayside because people are too afraid to touch him because he will become a presidential candidate, or at least a primary candidate at this point, depending on how it goes. If it goes the way that it did last time, then yeah, it'll be a presidential candidate, but we're not so sure this time. But it's kind of getting off into the weeds a little bit there. But you're right that, as I said before, they might not touch him. They might be afraid of him, and not so much him, but I think more of the base than anything else, and the power and influence he still theoretically has. We'll see. We're going to have to see. I don't think that we should have to wait and see. I think I agree with you that the Democrats need to be aggressive with what little time they have left. But knowing the Democratic Party the way that I do, unfortunately, being aggressive towards Republicans isn't their best. It's not what they're best at. They're really, really good at being aggressive towards progressives, but not Republicans, unfortunately.
Yeah, if they were investigating Bernie Sanders, man, they would they would have been full steam ahead. But
Bernie has three houses.
But one of the big things too from this the guilty verdict was, and this is the charge that really stuck out to me, and this is the one that could carry over into possibly bad things happening to the company was conspiracy. You know, the tax fraud type stuff, I don't want to say it's routine with corporations, but it, let's face it, it's routine with corporations. Conspiracy, on the other hand, showing that, you know, top to bottom, this place is rotten from the inside out, that could be, if something bad were to happen to the company itself, the conspiracy charge is where that would come from the legal perspective.
Right.
Again, I think you're right. I think we're talking about probably not going to happen if Alvin Bragg does do something, because he hasn't closed the investigation. It is still open. And they did actually just bring in the guy who – his name escapes me at the moment, but they brought in the guy that actually did the groundwork on the civil suit. So, okay, maybe he's going to do something. Maybe he's passing it off to this guy. And I think part of it is because he, like Merrick Garland, is scared. Like, I don't want to be the guy to do it. Let me bring in this other guy. So that way, when you send in all your hate mail and all that, it's, I didn't do it. It's this guy over here.
Right.
It's cowardly. But if it gets the job done, then by God, get the job done.
Well, I mean, that's really the crux of the issue. Is the job going to get done? And I think a lot of us don't have faith on, you know, that actually happening. But let me go back to the company, I guess the company culture. We could talk about that over the Trump organization. Fish rots from the head down. Donald Trump, of course, set the company culture and set up all of this to happen through his, the way that his, you know, managerial style is, to the decisions that he makes, to the fact that he had, you know, approved the bonuses and that he wants pretty much dictatorial control of his own company. Even if he doesn't know the particulars of what's actually going on, of what's actually happening, because he's too stupid to be able to follow the stuff that Weisselberg was doing. But he definitely, I think, knew that Weisselberg was doing these things. And all he cared about is, I don't want to pay taxes. I want to pay very, very little in taxes because I want to have more money. I want to keep my money. But let me go to a quote here. This is from DA, Assistant DA Josh Steinglass. And this was during the summation of the trial. He said this, and I love it. This whole narrative that Donald Trump was blissfully ignorant was just not real. And I think he's 100% on that. Of course, Donald Trump knew the culture of his company, and he knew that they were doing shady things in order to save him and the company money. And of course, also screw Medicare out of money. That's something that was noted in the Washington Post in passing. But yeah. They didn't pay the Medicare tax liabilities, and so they screw over Medicare. It's kind of an interesting fact, but yes, fish rots from the head down, and this is a great example of it. Unfortunately, as we all know, Donald Trump not on trial, not implicated here, but nonetheless, the buck stops with him.
It does, and it is interesting, too, because the organization's lawyers tried to argue in court basically that Trump's a dipshit. He's so dumb. He didn't know any of this was happening. So in trying to defend it, they have to claim that, no, this guy who was running the company knew nothing about what was happening in his own company. So either he did the fraud and knew it was happening, or he's a bumbling buffoon who is not the brilliant businessman he's built himself up to be. Either way, it's really bad. But that's what they had to go to court to argue, like, no, he was just, he would get a stack of documents on his desk and just blindly sign them all. Like, okay, that seems like negligence then, and he shouldn't be running a company. And that's what you're telling the court happened? I mean, no matter how you slice it, you made the guy look like an idiot. And now everybody just thinks, okay, well, now he's just a corrupt idiot in his business as well as every other facet of his life. So not the best legal argument to say that your CEO is just a moron, but that's what they tried. Didn't work so well.
Right. Steinglass argued back, actually, that the fact that this was sanctioned in a practice that was known to Mr. Trump directly rebuts the narrative that they had just brought up. But unfortunately, that conversation happened outside the presence of the jury, which is interesting.
And let's also not forget, I think people need to remember this. It was in the very early, I think it was on the day, the first day of this trial, Trump's lawyers went so off the rails, the judge had to send the jury out of the room to pretty much scold the Trump lawyers, saying, you guys are trying to confuse these people. They have no idea what you're even talking about. Please stick to the facts on record. So it was like from the moment it started, totally bad for the Trump organization. So the ruling itself is not shocking. They right. even they ran out of objections to the jurors. So they know they got stuck with a lot of anti-Trump jurors.
Yeah.
And it's going to be appealed. You know, Trump appeals everything. So, you know, this isn't even technically final yet, I guess.
Right. Right.
Things could change. I don't know that they will, though. I mean, you know, what do you think?
Well, of course, they're going to appeal, as you said before. I still think that they've had a pretty good case. I mean, Weisselberg, Fall Guy, basically threw himself on the sword right there and said, oh, yeah. No, it was all my fault. I did this 100%. In exchange for that, again, 5 months. He was facing 15 years, I believe. And he got 5 months. So that case is pretty much closed at this point. No matter how much they appeal, they're going to end up paying the whatever the jury decides. But it's a maximum of $1.7 million. I would be surprised if they paid the entirety of it. But there will be a fine because that's what you do to giant corporations. You fine them, they move on. And a lot of corporations have this, you know, fund set aside for litigation, which I'm sure you're aware of, yeah. You know. So they're prepared for this, and they just want to appeal because they want to appeal. And they have certainly that right under our laws.
And the lawyers get paid more money if they can continue the case, too. So Trump
of
needs
course.
To understand, like, dude, cut your losses now. Otherwise, you're going to end up paying these lawyers probably more than what you're going to pay in the fine.
Does he ever pay his lawyers, though? I mean, is that even true? He doesn't pay his lawyers. And that's why he gets stuck with clowns.
Yeah.
He has clownish lawyers. Had, you know, people like Rudy Giuliani. And so, you know, you get what you pay for. The greatest people, the best people, the most tremendous lawyers who, of course, are going to continue losing cases like this one. And then, shockingly, that everybody's going to be surprised when it comes out that he decided not to pay.
Yeah. And last we had heard, too, by the way, I think this was beginning of last year. Maybe no, I guess the beginning of this year. Rudy Giuliani still has not been paid. And Trump stopped taking his calls. That was the last we had heard about whether Rudy got paid. So sorry, Rudy. Keep sending those bills, man. Just send them to collections if you need to. They'll come knocking on the door at Mar-a-Lago. They don't even have to knock on the door. Apparently,
they just walk
right
in.
Can get in. But
they just walk right in.
Shifting gears a little bit, since we're talking about buffoons, a little bit of good news this week. It's not completely good news because of the final results, but ultimately it's good because Raphael Warnock won. He's headed to the Senate 6 more years, and we may not ever have to talk about Herschel Walker again. Walker loses, but he didn't lose by much. That's the disappointing part. I mean, was 1.7 million voters, I think. I'm still trying to – I mean, the final numbers are still coming in. But you had at least over 1 million voters in Georgia look at Herschel frickin' Walker and say, that's my guy. That's terrifying.
A little bit. A little bit. And so I guess you could go to one weird defense of Republican voter, and I can't believe I'm actually going to do that. But I'm just saying – maybe they think that's the power of redemption, right? Something that we have to understand the right wing about them is that when it comes to certain people that they like or prefer, they will redeem anyone. And so anyone – and no one is outside of the power of redemption of Jesus Christ, right? And so again, that's something you have to understand why all these Republicans – because we sit here and we look at the news cycle and we're still like – Why the heck is Milo Yiannopoulos, for example, being, you know, rehabilitated in the Republican Party, right? Or at least on the fringes. Why are these people like, you know, Herschel Walker, who did terrible, terrible things in his past and had lied about it up till, you know, like yesterday, okay, and still will lie about it. Why are these people, Mark Sanford, why are they getting rehabilitated and back into the party? Why are they being welcomed back in? And we see the same excuse, right? He found God. He found Jesus. And so, I mean, we tend to underestimate how much of a mental impact that has on the Republican electorate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think that's definitely part of the case of why Herschel Walker got 1.7 million votes. Yeah, the other part that I think is, and I think there's actually a couple of other things as well, but one thing is they might not have just heard the scandals. I mean, Fox News, right-wing media, they live in a bubble. They exist in a bubble. They just don't report on these things. They don't talk about these things. So I wouldn't be surprised that a lot of voters don't know about it on that case. And so, you know, redemption, not even knowing about it or caring about it, it's just a couple of those things. And the other thing, it's just that they would rather have someone like Herschel Walker in office than a Democrat.
Yeah, and that it reminds me a lot of the special election that Alabama had with Doug Jones and Roy Moore. Like, the dude's going to the malls, he's preying on the underage girls, and Doug Jones still barely.
Oh, but the left are the groomers.
Yeah, and so they want that Republican so bad. And you brought up a good point, the conservative media, because by God, Herschel Walker was on TV every day. I mean, multiple times every day. And usually he had, in the last month, he had his little chaperones. Lindsey Graham was always right there by his side, like taking up most of the time so Herschel couldn't talk. Ted Cruz did it. Tim Scott did it. I mean, other Republicans also went to Georgia. They put everything into helping this guy. I've never seen the Republicans come out like this over a Senate seat when it wasn't even going to give them really, obviously, the majority. But by God, they wanted it so bad, and they did everything they could because they knew how flawed he was.
Mm-hmm. Couple of things on that. For one, I just love how Lindsey Graham's pitch for Herschel Walker is mainly them trying to say that we can't be racist because, look, we have a black guy. I mean, he literally came out and said, look, now, some people say the Republican Party is racist. Well, how can we be racist when we have Herschel Walker? And I'm like, I got to clip that out. That's amazing. They're out there basically admitting it.
And he was almost in tears one time saying, I want young black kids to look at the Republican Party and see that they could. I mean, he almost cried on TV saying this. Maybe because he knows it's a lie, but it was so pathetic and hilarious at the same time.
And the other part here is you said that they pulled out all the stops to help Herschel Walker. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there was a report in the Salt Lake Tribune that I did the other day. And I thought it was fascinating because here we have Republican politicians that actively were exploiting Herschel Walker's campaign and the donors specifically. And I'm not talking about big donors. I'm talking about the small dollar Republican voters, right, that will donate to Herschel Walker. Find out that two Republican senators, possibly more, but there were two named in the report. I think Burgess Owen and Mike Lee. Burgess Owen's in the House, but Senator Mike Lee was taking half of every donation to Herschel Walker. And of course, nobody knew about it. You had the little fine print, and you know, all that stuff. Nobody knew about it. It took reporters, journalists going in there and looking and saying, wait a minute, hold on. Half of these donations to Herschel Walker, if you give $10, $5 is going to Mike Lee. Or $5 is going to, you know, Burgess Owens. And that's not even the worst part. The National Republican Senate Committee took 99 cents out of every dollar donated to Herschel Walker's campaign. It got so bad that one of Herschel Walker's, I believe his campaign manager, was coming out and saying, you can't just keep taking all their money. Like, you're just taking gigantic cuts. Oh, and another part, Donald Trump, when he was boosting Walker, took 90% of all the donations until he was busted and then had to switch to go 50-50. So they were exploiting Walker's campaign for their own ends. They could put money in their own campaign coffers. And it is just really interesting and pretty on brand for Republicans to exploit a black candidate, their own.
And he doesn't – like Herschel Walker doesn't even comprehend that that is what happened to him.
True.
Like they used you to raise all this money, which was absolutely hilarious. They're using you so that if you win, you can go out and say the things that they want to say, but as old white guys, they can't say. Like it mm-hmm. was absolutely just using him from day one. And he doesn't know. He's out there like, hey, I watched the movie. It's got some vampires and werewolves, and it was crazy. Like, cool, man. That's a real fun story. Maybe you can tell those stories to your kids. Well, if they'll talk to you, I don't know.
If you ever see them.
Yes. If you even know who they are, because we still don't know. But, yeah, I mean, you almost, if he wasn't such a horrible human being, you almost could feel a little sympathy yep. for him. Because he was really used by these people. Not saying I do have sympathy, but if I were a kinder, gentler soul, if I had found Jesus, I would probably have sympathy for him. But
right.
He needs help, and he's not getting the help, and he's trying to claim his religion as the reason he doesn't have to get real help when he's got a disorder that absolutely is treatable with therapy, mm-hmm. possibly mm-hmm. with pharmaceuticals. Even I mean, you know, that's iffy. Those are a little dangerous, but get help. Like, don't run for office. Go get the help that we all know you need, that your family knows you need, and repair those relationships instead of, you know, being Lindsey Graham's useful idiot.
Right, right. And you know what? Look, it would have been – we're seeing Republicans come out now and say things like, wow, he should have pulled out of that race. There's no reason he should have been in that race for this long to begin with. And it's like, well, you could just add this to the long list of things and times that Herschel Walker failed to pull out. This erection was about the people and all. But, you know, it got flaccid.
It sure did. And on that note, I think actually that's a good transition because Walker didn't win, but Republicans did win back the House this year, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if people don't know, we had midterm elections this year. Republicans,
really?
I heard. I didn't see it happen, but we did have those.
Oh, goodness.
So we got 2023 right around the corner. January 3rd, new Congress is sworn in. Marjorie Taylor Greene is basically the de facto speaker. She's already been told she can do whatever the hell she wants. And by God, Jeff, she is going to investigate everything from Hunter Biden's laptop to any, you know, anything you've ever said. I'm pretty sure is also on her list.
Sure.
So just be aware of that.
I welcome it.
but Democrats are in trouble because we're all being investigated in 2023.
What is she going to do? Is she going to bring the gazpacho police?
She is. She's going to pour some cold soup on that idea. But I can't help but think, and there's even more Republicans coming out now saying that if we just spend the next 2 years investigating 2024, we're handing it to the Democrats on a silver platter, which is one of the many reasons why I'm actually perfectly fine with nonstop investigations from the Republican Party. Because, sure. Okay, worst case scenario, they find some corrupt people and we bust them. Like, oh no, bad people get caught doing bad. Like, there's no downside at all, I see.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's let's go with that direction. I mean, they have this weird mistaken like idea that we're going to be upset if they find that Hunter Biden did something criminal and that he gets prosecuted for it. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah. No, we actually do believe in the law. We do believe in the Constitution.
Well, I won't be voting for Hunter Biden again. I'll tell you that.
No, I know. Yep. Ooh, he's off the ballot on this time. Yep.
But you're absolutely right, because, you know, I posted this on Twitter like a week ago. I was like, I've never talked to a single person on the left that actually cares if Hunter Biden gets prosecuted, if they find criminal activity. Like, we're all like, okay, fine. The DOJ is also investigating him. It looks like there could be tax fraud there.
Yeah.
Great. Do the process. bring charges if you find the evidence. Like, I will lose no sleep at night. That will not change my opinion of Joe Biden or any other Democrat at all. I still hold them slightly above where I hold Republicans, and that's not going to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that. It's what they're doing is really showing you. And by the way, this is something that I hope Democrats would actually run on. I don't necessarily think that they will, but if they're smart, they'll go with this and say, look at what Republicans did the entire time they were in power. Nonstop investigation, nonstop investigation. What have they done for you? Have they helped you with inflation? Have they passed any sort of policies that would, you know, help you make ends meet? Have they done anything? No, they've investigated Hunter Biden's laptop. Ooh. You know, they did Benghazi 3 or Benghazi 4. What are you up to now? Like Benghazi investigation 9 or 8, something like that. I don't know. They're going to try. They're going to keep going with that. They're going to go with the pullout from Afghanistan. They're going to go with just all these nonsense investigations, which are going to go nowhere, but will feed, you know, the red meat to the base that they so desire. And in doing so, they will do nothing for the people. And again, I hope Democrats run on that message that Republicans have done absolutely nothing for you and have tried to do nothing for you. And look, the thing about the Democratic Party is they actually did try to do things. As hard as we are on the Democrats, and we should be, they did try to do some things.
Yep.
And of course, you know, you had the processes that shut it down, Manchin Sinema. The other good thing about Warnock winning is that it kind of maybe will invalidate Joe Manchin, or at least reduce his influence on upcoming legislation. You know, I don't know how much we'll do with that with the Republicans running the House and all that. But I don't know. There's hope later, you know, with 2024 election, maybe winning back the House, et cetera. But we'll have to see on that. But they're spending all their time doing absolutely, you know, the Republicans doing absolutely nothing when the Democrats actually did try to pass legislation. And, you know, it's not everything that we want, obviously. But goddamn, is this something?
Yeah.
Republicans are giving you nothing.
And that should be the message. And the thing I always say, too, is we also don't have to wait. Well, the Democratic Party doesn't have to wait until the, you know, September of 2024 to put that out there in an ad. You know,
right.
Maybe when March of 2023 rolls around, maybe you just roll out a national ad campaign on primetime television, you know, not just putting out a, you know, ad on Facebook. Show it to the conservative voters and be like, listen, they've been in power now for a couple of months. What have they done? Well, they've tried to impeach Joe Biden 18 times. You know, they've told you about a laptop that they all somehow already have the contents of, which, by the way, seems very illegal. That, I mean, Matt Gaetz entered it into the congressional record. Who allowed you to have a copy of a private citizen's laptop? I mean,
exactly.
That kind of seems like the thing that's been totally glossed over with all of the laptop story. Rudy Giuliani also has a copy. Tucker Carlson,
right.
FedEx lost his copy, unfortunately.
Oh, sad.
But yeah, how did they get it? But anyway, that's beside the point. Start running ads in April or May of next year as more Republicans start announcing they're running for president, and go ahead and taint them. Don't let them capture that narrative to where you're playing from behind. You've got money. You can run these ads today if you wanted to start this. And we are all on the same page. The message you put out there, like, talk about how they've done nothing, is this, it's the same thing I've been saying. It's the same thing. The folks at TYT are saying it's the same thing that Pacman and Cedar and Kyle Kalinske and everybody else is saying the same thing. Like, for the love of God, just do it. We all know it. We all see it. But none of us are in a position of power within that party. So we just have to scream it every day.
Which brings me to what I'm afraid is going to happen. And that would be they're going to focus on Trump bad. Running the same playbook. And again, we all know Trump bad, but can we go into the fact that, you know, there is still the Republican establishment and they are still running the same kinds of policy positions that they had before, which is tax cuts for the rich, deregulation of industry, and generally making your life as a regular working class person worse. That's what the message should be. That's what they're trying to do. And you don't need to really hyper-focus as much on Donald Trump as you are for the rest of the party, because that's what the party stands for.
Yeah, and it's such an obvious message, which, of course, is why the DNC doesn't see it, because it is obvious. And they're brilliant at overlooking the obvious. And you're right, you know, the Democratic Party does deserve some praise. In the last 2 years, they've done some good things. None of it, I will say, none of it was as good as it could have been or originally was when introduced. But you got to take the victories when you get them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's the most depressing thing in the world. So they did some good things, and they do deserve the credit for that. But
yeah, let me just add one last thing on that note. Take the W when you can.
Yeah.
Take the win. I know we're leftists. We're progressives. Okay. We're used to taking the L's all the time. Every once in a while, you got to take the win. Sure, it's not everything that we want, but it's something. It's a win is a win, and sometimes you just need that for morale.
You really do, and you know it's more wins than we have seen in a long, long time.
Right.
So you know that's always a positive. But I do want to talk, because we're talking about, okay, are the Democrats just going to be the anti-Trump party going forward? And that may not even be necessary, because we could have some challengers to Trump, and I'm not just talking about Ron DeSantis. So if we exclude DeSantis, who he's running, folks, don't let him fool you with his, he's running for president. He just got his huge mandate in the Florida governor's race. He has $150 million in his campaign war chest. He's running for president because he can't run for governor again. So what you going to do with that money? You got nothing to lose in 2024. You're not up for re-election. Go for it. Well, he sucks. Don't go for it. I'd love it if he didn't. But besides DeSantis, is there anybody you think we need to keep an eye on as somebody that may have a chance?
Honestly, I don't really see anyone. I know it's kind of disappointing, but what we've seen over the last, 6 years – is a party that's been dominated by Trumpism. And yet when you get, as a result of the midterms, you see that hold starting to loosen. And I don't think there's anyone that I've seen so far that's ready to step up into that vacuum. Again, we've got the possible Chris Christie. Ooh, right? that's really the only one so far that I've seen kind of try to stand out. Maybe we'll have, Ted Cruz. Maybe there's, some other establishment-y type of Republicans. Maybe some anti-Trump Republicans that will throw their hat into the ring. But so far, I haven't really seen any of them gain any sort of traction inside the party. And I would be very surprised if that happens. Right now, as you said before, it looks like Ron DeSantis, when he declares, because there's no question here, he will. It'll be a DeSantis versus Trump. But then again, I'm not exactly well known for my political, prognostications.
Back in 2015, I predicted Trump was going to drop out after the first Republican debate. That was before the debate even happened. I said, after that first debate, he'll make it. So I'm not so great at Trump predictions either. But I will say, if Trump gets indicted, about 5 minutes after that indictment, you can expect Ron DeSantis to say, oh, by the way, I am running for president now. And I think that's probably what a lot of these other Republicans are waiting for, too, because we do have big movement with the DOJ investigation. We're about to get the final report from the January 6th committee. So I think you've got a lot of Republicans like standing there ready to start the race, but only if that indictment happens. And I do think, just people to kind of keep an eye on, one name I throw out there is Kristi Noem from South Dakota. She's got the MAGA credentials. She would never challenge Trump, but she could be somebody Trump may partner with, assuming he doesn't get indicted, which isn't that big of an assumption to make. We know how it works. But if he makes it through, and if he sees, okay, where's my weakest point? One of my weakest points is suburban women. So I got to choose a woman, but I can't choose Marjorie Taylor Greene because she is universally despised outside of her district. I need somebody that's not going to say no to me, but isn't, you know, a wacky, wacky person. And, well, she is, but she hasn't had the publicity. I think Kristi Noem would be a good running mate for Trump if I'm a Republican advisor.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say Republican advisor, okay? Because if it was Donald Trump making the decision, well, there's only one thing that would matter to Donald Trump. Maybe two things. Loyalty, okay? Mm-hmm. Loyalty would be the second one, actually. And the first one is, they can't overshadow me. I have to be number one. I am the best. I'm the greatest. That person who's running with me, whose name I, you know, will say every once in a while, they're over there. But they're tremendous and they're fantastic and they bring me coffee sometimes. Coffee boy, coffee girl, coffee boy, whatever.
And it could be Carrie Lake. It could be Carrie Lake.
It could be.
She's pretty much moved into Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, yeah. But I also kind of disagree with your assessment of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Yes, she is universally hated by a lot of people. That doesn't mean that she wouldn't try anyway.
That's true.
Whether to be Donald Trump's running mate or even to try to possibly throw her hat in the ring herself. And not that I think that that's super likely. But again, when you're talking about the Republican Party and how insane they've gotten, you should really expect the unexpected at this point. Nobody expected, you know, Kanye to come out and, you know, scream about how he loves Hitler and then have Republicans try to defend him and bring him on their shows. you didn't actually mean that, you love your Nazis, right? And he's like, no, I love Hitler. Okay. Oh, I disagree with you on that one. I think we need to have a discussion about the globalists. Alex Jones, clown.
Yeah,
total clown.
That was definitely not something I had on my 2022 bingo card. Not even close to it.
Expect the unexpected. The Republicans, they will surprise you.
And you know what's interesting, too, about the whole Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, rise to stardom is that she hasn't technically been in office a full 2 years yet. I mean, that's what's so crazy about her. Just meteoric rise to stardom in MAGA world is she is still technically a first term member of Congress. There's 435 of them up there, and she has made such a name for herself in just two short years. You know, whether you love her or hate her, you know who she is. And that is virtually unheard of for a first term member of Congress. But we got other Lauren Boebert, Madison Cawthorn, who is not coming back, of course, but he was known. No. It's just crazy how these MAGA latchers on have propelled themselves to stardom, really.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right on that. It is insane. But again, when we're dealing with insane people that are driven by the base, who are living in their own alternate media reality, and that creates a completely alternate reality in itself, I'm not surprised, but you know what's funny? You said she's only been in the spotlight for 2 years. It feels like an eternity.
It does.
It feels like she's been here like forever. And that's so incredibly disheartening. Like it's been 87 years. I feel like I've known Marjorie Taylor Greene for that long. Good Lord, it's only been two. She's got a possibly long career ahead of her. I mean, she didn't exactly have any problems winning re-election in her district.
Nope. And
unlike Lauren Boebert,
who actually did
have a challenge.
Yeah, and I think a good Republican challenger in 2024 might be able to knock her off. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, to her credit, she's in great health. She works out. She exercises. She's in a deep red district that ain't going anywhere. She could be the next Dianne Feinstein. I mean, she could be there till she's 90. I don't want to be talking about her 40 years from now, but by God, if I have to, I'll do it. I'll be here probably with even less hair, I imagine, than I have right now. But God, I don't want to talk about her for another 30 years. but we could be in that situation. And speaking of the rise to stardom among these little MAGA freaks, whatever happened to poor Dan Crenshaw? I mean, Dan Crenshaw was the rising star of the GOP, put out his Avengers-style videos, and then suddenly, like, just radio silence from Crenshaw. And that's the weirdest thing to me, is because he was on the same level with, like, Gates and Green and Boebert, and the other three stayed out there, and Crenshaw tried to, I think, become normal, like, tried to not be as crazy, because he saw that, oh, this may, you know, I think he's got presidential ambitions eventually. But yeah, that guy just kind of dropped off the map. I know he's still there. But yeah, just Crenshaw kind of backed away from it and was like, I'm going to go in my deeply gerrymandered district for a while. So that was weird to me. That's just, I just wanted to bring that up because I found it weird.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of strange. Dan Crenshaw, that's what I like to call him, because of those ridiculous ads. But wasn't he beefing with Marjorie Greene for a while?
He was, and actually, yeah. Gates was in on that. This was months and months and months ago, because she was talking about impeachment, and those two were like, no, impeaching Biden is stupid. We're not going to do that. Even Matt Gaetz said it, who is now full steam ahead. Let's impeach him every day. But I think that's where Crenshaw kind of, you know, veered off the path and said, wait a minute, what if we tried being normal Republicans and just did tax cuts for wealthy people? People like that. So
yeah, it's like that. I forget Ohio congressman. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name, but it's one of those things where they kind of, once they are done with their primaries, they go a little bit to the more usual establishment Republican position. And you're right. I think that's what happened with Crenshaw. He wasn't as insane as he was, you know, claiming to be, or at least hanging around that crowd where you have to be. And for the base, it's like, nah, no, we prefer insane. We like insane. Be more crazy. Now, the problem is that if we've seen in the midterms is that when you go too insane, you turn everyone else off.
Never go full MAGA.
Never go full MAGA. Yeah. It only worked once, and that was too many times.
Well, and I think Dan Crenshaw, I think the difference with him, because he can play well with the MAGA base, because he knows to turn it on and turn it off. Because Dan Crenshaw is not crazy. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's not acting. Like, that is really who she is. But you do have those candidates, and these are the ones that worry me the most, like Crenshaw, because he can turn it on and off. Like, depending on who he's talking to, he knows, okay, is this the crowd that I need to be crazy with? Okay, yeah, I can do that. Oh, I got to be totally normal. I'm talking to donors here. I can do that. Those are the people that are the most dangerous. Ted Cruz used to be that, but I think he was so desperate to be liked by the MAGA crowd, like, he can't get himself out of it.
Yep.
I don't want to clown on Ted Cruz too much. Obviously, some issues there. But, you know, just him as a politician, we know what he's like. We've got still so much to cover here, because we got to talk about the massive bombshell that threatens all of our existence, and that is the Twitter files.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. We have to.
So for anybody who didn't know, last week, Matt Taibbi, former progressive, I think is the best way to call him, got a hold from Twitter, all their documents, and he exposed how they helped bury the Hunter Biden story. Until you actually read what he actually found, and that's not at all what happened, is it, Jeff?
Right. Yeah. Although they did deny us the pleasure of being able to see pictures of Hunter Biden's hog.
Yes. We've been robbed, folks.
We've been robbed.
And it's so hilarious that Matt Taibbi, who somebody over the years we had on Ring of Fire, God knows how many times, because he was taking on corporate power. He was exposing it. He was such a phenomenal journalist when he was with Rolling Stone. And then when Trump came along, Taibbi, I feel like he went the Greenwald route, which is, oh, everybody hates Trump. Well, I'm such a contrarian. I'm going to do the opposite, because that's all it is anymore. It's just contrarian trolling. If everybody comes out and says, hey, it's a sunny day, Greenwald's going to be like, all I see is a cloud up here. You liberals, you're so dumb. Like, dude, just let it go. But this Twitter files crap is crap. I mean, there's no bombshell. Well, the bombshell actually was, oh, by the way, the Trump administration, not campaign, administration, the friggin' White House also had Twitter remove some stuff. But, you know, anyway, Hunter Biden's laptop. They buried the only thing that actually could be a First Amendment violation.
Right. And you know what is interesting about that? I agree. It's not a bombshell, certainly a dud. But you could say, from that perspective of, okay, we do care about, you know, the First Amendment, free speech and all that, et cetera, that having these companies that are supposed to be the public town square getting influenced by the White House on one side and then another presidential campaign on the other, and then both petitioning, asking for the removal of things that are, you know, possibly negative to their campaign, and then getting those granted, that's a problem. It shows that, you know, these private corporations, that's what Twitter is. You don't have free speech on them. But since they are so influential, can really drive politics, the news cycle, and like I said, the dissemination of information or disinformation on these platforms is an interesting conversation. And, you know, whether or not you actually do have the freedom to have these conversations about certain news issues, because think of it this way, right? The story about Hunter Biden's laptop being censored, that's the actual story that the right wing is talking about. It wouldn't have been a big deal had Twitter not, you know, removed the story and banned the New York Post. It wouldn't have been a story, but because, you know, you've heard of the Streisand effect, right? Yeah. Because they banned it, the right wing turned the story, which was a nothing burger, turned the censorship into the story. And so then they, of course, falsely ascribed, you know, the First Amendment to it. Again, you don't have free speech on Twitter. You have to sign a TOS. These are private corporations. If you actually do want a real public town square type of, you know, internet forum, what have you, then it's got to be, I would say, more nationalized, you know, something that is actually protected by free speech, but you're still going to have rules on it, right? So, you know, Nazis, you know, doing threats and stuff and doxing, et cetera, it's still not going to be acceptable. If you want that, yeah, we can have a conversation. Let's go. Let's talk about that and the pros and cons of it. But Twitter itself, it shows that, you know, the one person that runs it, the CEO, in this case, Elon Musk, has too much power over our conversations. And I've been saying this not only about, you know, Elon Musk. I've been talking about it before with Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook and you know, Google and all these large platforms, corporations that have too much power over our discourse that are being private companies that are unaccountable to us, you know, actual people, human beings. I think that's a problem.
I agree 100%. And that, I think, is the best way I've ever heard that put. As it stands right now, Elon Musk controls not just the public town square itself.
Mm-hmm.
He controls what you see. I mean, he's already broken the algorithm, because yep. There are plenty of times I get on Twitter. In fact, most of the time, all I see are tweets from Marcy Wheeler and Sean King. Anything that they tweet or retweet is all that's in my feed most times I get on Twitter.
Huh.
It's weird. So weird. Yeah, he's broken it. And I've seen it. Dr. Michael Mann has said the same thing. He's not getting Marcy Wheeler and Sean King. He's getting just a handful of other people. Cliff Schechter has also said that. Cliff Schechter just actually retweeted somebody who also said. So there's a lot of folks out there that are like, you've broken it. But even when it is working properly, he can go in. Like, I'll see his tweets. I don't follow him. Nobody
right.
that I follow retweeted him, but suddenly he's in my feed, and
yep.
I don't want you there. go away. So he controls what you see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, half the time he breaks it. And half the time it's, oh, look at me. But it's dangerous, especially, you know, when we're heading into presidential campaign season, that one man who has fired all the competent people at that business, one man controls it all. And, oh, and by the way, he's the richest man on the planet in mm-hmm. all of eternity. Yeah, that's a problem. Kind of seems bad, but it's what we live in now.
Yeah, it's almost like what happened, you know, with Trump becoming president. Suddenly, now all the issues that we as progressives have been bringing up before with, you know, executive overreach and things like that. Ooh, wow. Oh, my God. Turns out that's a problem. We, you know, everybody else caught on. It's like, oh, crap. Maybe we shouldn't have had, you know, drone signature strike programs. Oh, you know, that are being controlled by the executive branch. Oh, crap. Boy, that's too much power for one person that ends up being an insane person. But in the case of Elon Musk, he's not an insane person. He's a deeply, I think, stupid person.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm sorry. He's not a smart person at all. But he is somebody who's got a very thin skin that is wrapped up in this conservative, you know, right wing. I know he. I'm an enlightened centrist, even though I'm telling people vote for Republicans.
DeSantis 2024.
You know, it's only because the far left is so insane. I mean, you know, you got the far left who wants health care for everybody. And then you got the far right, which are, I mean, I'm not going to say that they're Nazis because I keep bringing Nazis back on our my platform. But, you know, they're a little out there. And so you should vote for Republicans to stop the far left agenda. Yeah, that's Elon Musk for you. That's what he's telling you. And, you know, going back to what's in your feed, who am I getting in my feed? Well, at least you're getting Sean King and Marcy Wheeler, right? I know. But I'm getting right-wingers. I'm getting crazy people. And a lot of, you know, the people that I, you know, talk to are seeing the same thing. And so I'm kind of wondering, like, is he rigging Twitter, the algorithm, to put more far-right voices in front of other people, in front of, you know, the general public? And that is concerning because what he and the right wing have accused Twitter of doing before, and I think this is interesting, because they always talk about, you're ringing it for the Democrats, for the left, and you're shadow banning conservatives. Well, he has actually made that a reality because that wasn't true before. And I've had questions about, you know, Twitter enforcing the rules fairly. Because let's be honest, Twitter was a dumpster fire before Elon Musk took over. But now he has taken a one dumpster fire and turned it into a three dumpster fire, possibly even a five dumpster fire that is threatening to start the entire neighborhood ablaze. And so there were problems before. There are bigger problems now. And he has actually made it so that what the right wing feared was happening to them, but really wasn't, is actually happening to the left. I mean, I would be curious to know if any right wingers are getting left, actual progressives, leftists in their Twitter feeds or not. That would answer my question.
It would be nice. Like Charlie Kirk, are you seeing Jeff Waldorf and Farron Cousins?
Yeah.
You should. Maybe you'll learn something. Real quick, Jeff, one last thing I got to ask you real quick.
Sure.
Democrats are going to shuffle up the primary calendar. Thank God. But then they say, let's do South Carolina. And it makes me want to slam my head into the desk because I've been saying for many, 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 many years, start with a swing state because you spend millions of dollars. You spend 6 months to 12 months walking around the whole state. Do it in a place where you actually could sway the way the voters in that state vote in the primary or the general. So let's say, Jeff Waldorf, you have unilateral authority to pick the first primary and or caucus state. And Jeff, with his overall number one pick, has picked what state?
I actually would not pick one state specifically. I would actually have a rolling state. You see, you go to whichever swing state is most important, most representative of the average American voter, not Democrat, not Republican, but average American voter. I don't think it should be located in one state for eternity. I don't think that system makes sense. I don't think holding the first primary in Iowa made any sense whatsoever. no disrespect to the people of Iowa.
Good people.
But I just don't think it made sense to do it in places that are, again, not competitive when it comes to general elections. And to keep it in one place, because you know how demographics change. People will move. Some states will see an increase in populations. Other states will see a decrease in populations. And you'll see changes in voting patterns. And so what I think the primaries need to do is to follow the states that are most representative of what a general election looks like. So you avoid the issue of, for example, putting it in California, because that wouldn't make sense, because that's, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, slanted to one side. It's not representative, whatever. But also putting it in, as I said, Iowa or Alabama or Florida, you know, if those states happen to be most representative of the electorate, then by all means. And by the way, that also gives everyone, every different state, a chance to have the benefits and understand that this is what this fight is all about. The benefits of tourism and ad spending in that state that goes to local media outlets and have it spread around so that everyone has a chance. I think that seems to be the most fair system. And given how that's that's a fact, we're never going to do it.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen.
And it gets me too, you know, when the Democrats are doing their autopsy reports, whether they win or lose elections, it's usually like, well, how can we better reach the voters in Wisconsin? How can we better reach the voters in Michigan? Well, I don't know. Maybe spend 6 months and $50 million walking around the state and knocking on doors, which is what you do in Iowa, and you're never going to win Iowa. So, yes, Michigan is far more representative of what the country looks like. Wisconsin, it's overwhelmingly white, but it's still a swing state with a decent number of electoral college votes. And if we can't abolish that, then I guess we still got to think about it.
Right.
But Nevada is a good example. Hell, even Georgia, North Carolina. And so there are places where, instead of looking back and saying, why didn't we reach these voters? It's because you just spent 12 months at the Iowa State Fair eating corn dogs with a bunch of people who would never vote for you in a general election. So I'm glad they are changing it, but it's still a swing and a miss to me.
Right. I think you're still going to end up with a similar problem. And I get why they would choose South Carolina, because, you know, you have black voters that are the backbone of the Democratic Party, and you want to appeal to them as well, even if you're not going to, or very unlikely to have an impact in the general election as far as the Electoral College goes. I get it. I get the decision. Is it more, like, I got a question for you. Do you think that's more pandering towards the black vote in South Carolina, this decision?
I feel like it is.
Okay. I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, I feel like that's why they picked South Carolina, which you could have done the same thing in a state. Not that I want them to pander, but I do think they're trying to, you know, do a Lindsey Graham, Herschel Walker thing. Like, oh, look at us. Look what we're giving you, buddies. Like, come on. Don't be so patronizing to the voters. They can see through this. And of course, you know, oh, Biden won huge in South Carolina. Yeah, we get it. We get it. But South Carolina's better than Iowa. I give them that.
But at least when it comes to primary votes, for sure.
Yeah. And you know, because Iowa, I think I looked it up a couple of days ago, it was like 91% white.
I'll agree with you. For sure. And again, that's why I agree with you on South Carolina being a better choice than Iowa, because at least in, like, performatively, you're saying, you know, to black voters in South Carolina, hey, we actually give a shit now. well, that's good. We should do more policy that shows that we give a shit. You know, give black voters more, you know, more good policy that, that helps them as well. But yeah, still better than Iowa. And again, no hatred towards Iowa or South Carolina or any of the states that didn't get mentioned. It just, again, doesn't seem as representative to what we see in the general election. So I guess from that standpoint, that's why I arrive at that conclusion. But looking at the Democratic Party, I can see why they came to the conclusion that they came to.
Yeah, that's it's almost predictable at this point. Hey, look, fix it all. Just do it all in the same day. Every state, every day, get it done. Mm. Break it up into quadrants if you want. Like, we got 4 days of voting, you know, Northeast, Southeast, Midwest, and then Northwest. Sorry, I forgot what they were called. They're so far. I'm down here in Florida. They're way up there in Oregon and Washington. But no, listen, Jeff Waldorf, Around the Nation is the show. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure, you can find me on YouTube.com/WaldorfNation. That's 4 p.m. Eastern every day. We do a live stream, a little bit of a live stream, you know, have some fun. We do that also on Twitch, same time, same place. That's twitch.tv/Jeff_Waldorf. And, of course, our Facebook page, which is actually doing quite well as of late, is facebook.com/JeffWaldorfShow. You can catch us all at the same time in those platforms and, you know, check out our videos and all that.
Jeff Waldorf, thank you so much for talking with us today. I appreciate
you
taking the entire time. I know I kept you for a while, so thank you very much.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you again. Let's do it again later.
And that's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank Jeff Waldorf again. You can go follow him on YouTube. It is youtube.com/WaldorfNation. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the Ring of Fire YouTube channel. youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm Farron Cousins, and you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and even TikTok if you're so inclined. I'm at Farron Balanced across all those platforms. Thank you all so much for joining us this week. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.